You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with the cast and crew of Ladybuds. In the new documentary Ladybuds, director Chris J. Russo covers a unique point in history as she follows a group of female growers after California's legalization of marijuana. In this one-on-one, we get to speak to Russo, legacy grower Chia Rodriguez, and cannabis advocate Sue Taylor about fighting the stigma of marijuana and the oncoming threat of big business. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Hello to all of you, ladies. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Yeah, Ladybuds is a wonderful story. I really appreciate a chance to talk with all of you. But Chris, let's start with you. What is it that drew you to this particular space, this moment in history?
Well, in 2016, recreational cannabis legalization was on the ballot in California, and I knew life was going to change for a lot of people here. And I started to investigate, and as a documentarian, I did a lot of research. I saw that there were a lot of women in the space, and I had read some facts that 36% of leadership roles were held by women in cannabis. And I was like, wow, that's unprecedented in any market. So I started to interview women, lots of women up and down California. And I was pleasantly surprised that, you know, thinking this was a bro culture, that women were the backbone of the cannabis industry. And so the story just kind of unfolded from there. You have to be a curious person to make a documentary. And I just kind of wanted to see where it was going to go with legalization. So the film, the framework of the film ended up being the 1 year leading up to legalization in California, and then the 1 year following in the lives of all of these women entrepreneurs and activists to see how they would fare against the challenges that were set up by the state regulations.
You know, one of the things you said there, I think, is so key to the film, is you talk about how the fact that it when you think of the marijuana industry, you think of it as a bro culture. But this is a film that really looks to break down some of those stereotypes in so many different ways. And I think you do an excellent job of that.
Thanks so much. I really wanted to flip the script. I really think that these women in my film are superheroes. And I think that women are changing the cannabis industry for the better. They're shining the light on the wellness properties of the plant. They're creating incredibly interesting businesses and products. They're heads of companies. Yeah. And, you know, it's time we, you know, change the stigma of cannabis, and who better to do it but the women of the industry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Chia, I mean, you're a legacy grower. So no pun intended, this must've felt extra sweet for you. I was wondering, what was it like growing up in that environment and now taking on that role of leadership?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been part of my life, my whole entire life. And so for me to kind of come out into the open and tell the world what we're up to was, you know, a little bit scary at first. I've always been a community organizer as well. And so sort of just natural that I started bringing in other farmers and helping to educate consumers about small farmers and the legacy that we have built over the last, you know, few decades.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. Sue, what about you? How did your interest in all of this begin? I mean, I can't imagine there are too many retired Catholic school principals that are in the marijuana industry at this point. Can you talk a little bit about your journey?
Yes. For one, I hadn't planned on, I didn't wake up and say, oh yeah, I'd like to start talking about weed. No way.
Fair.
No way. And I've always said that, if someone had told me 12 years ago, I would be an advocate, in the cannabis industry, I'd have said, oh baby, you've been smoking too much. It never, ever. You know, and I got in it, really, my son brought me in it, and I came to save him, and he didn't really need it to be saved. I was the one that was saved. And then I had a girlfriend who, my dear friend, childhood friend, that passed on from a illness that could have been saved by cannabis. And she was too afraid to use it. She says, oh, no, I don't want those drugs in my body. And see, she had morphine dripping through her, she was in the hospital, all kinds of drugs just flowing through her system. But she says, oh, no, when I suggested cannabis, I don't want those drugs in my system. So that told me, you know, I came to that realization that something really had to change. And as I continued in the industry working with trying to save my son from drugs eliminating the fear myself first, because I had that same fear that everybody did, most elders do, about the cannabis. But as I worked through working with the seniors in medical cannabis, working at Harborside, when I saw all the healing components of this plant, it changed my mind. It changed my mind.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about that's been highlighted in your story here, is you really are focusing too and talking about the seniors and the lives that have been changed by your involvement in this. And I was wondering, what is it about that? Like, how has your work been able to help so many people?
Number one, the biggest part of it, and it's Steve, right?
Yep.
You know, the biggest part of it, Steve, is that I genuinely care. Mm. I genuinely care about humankind, and I genuinely care about people feeling good, and especially about elders. I care. Mm. Number two, I've been so successful because it's like Stephen D'Angelo said, you have to send the right messenger. That's what he named me. He said, I sent the right messenger, Sue Taylor. I'm the right messenger because I'm of their age. Speaking of the elders, I'm a woman, you know, I'm softer. And I also come with a lot of credibility. You know, I'm a Catholic school principal. I'm a commissioner on aging for the county. You know, I'm a mama, I'm a grandmama. I'm also certified by the state of California to teach the medical cannabis programs to nurses and all of that kind of stuff that make them say, oh, well, okay, she's not just a weed head. You know, they listen. And then I hit them with the cannabis. You know, I talk to them about cannabis. So they listen and they know, this is the biggest part, Steve. They know what they're doing now with all the drugs that they're taking for health. They know it's not working. So once you come in and educate them about what this cannabis does and does not do, they become open. Does that make sense? You see it right there. And then you talk about the healing components. You show them that you care, you know, and then you educate them about cannabis. Mm. And you educate them, you don't convince them. You don't convince them of anything. You just give them knowledge.
I think that's a great point. And for you and for Chia, I would love to know your idea about the stigma associated with it. Because, I mean, this is something that's continuing to evolve. But, I mean, Sue, you were just talking here about educating them and then saying, oh, by the way, you know, we're talking about cannabis here and how that's, but for both of you, wondering the struggles you've seen in that and the changes that you've seen along the way.
Well, you know, I feel like normalizing cannabis as something that helps almost everything that, you know, you can think of is really the mission here, that, you know, it's not a drug. It can be misused, of course, and it can be overused. But, you know, really that cannabis has such a broad spectrum of ailments that it can help with. We really aim to normalize cannabis in everyone's households, for, you know, topically to inhaling, you name it. And as a mom myself, it's been a struggle to, you know, not feel like a hypocrite when I'm utilizing cannabis on a daily basis. just for mental relaxation, on top of all the other things going on with my health, and not feel like a hypocrite when I'm telling my children to be careful and cautious and, you know, use it at the right time in their lives. And, you know, as we're talking to the public, you know, also normalizing cannabis as something that can be in everybody's households or everybody's gardens here in California with recreational cannabis. You can also cultivate 6 plants. And so it's sort of full circle that I'm kind of constantly having these discussions from everything from, you know, normalizing growing the cannabis to utilizing the cannabis in your daily life.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Sue, what about you?
Particularly the stigma?
Yeah.
I had the hardest time with it. Hmm. Because, Steve, I'm a person of color. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I've been discriminated on all my life. And so when my son first started talking about cannabis, you know, I said, oh, God, I was, because you're being judged, right? And here's just another added thing, you know, to my life. And when I first got started in working at Harborside, I'd have to go to the places where the directors of senior facilities met up at once a month, like the Commission on Aging, things of that nature, the advisory board for seniors, where the administrators would come and have meetings, and then you'd have to stand up and introduce yourself. And then I remember distinctly, I went to Santa Clara County Commission on Aging. I was the only person of color there. And I walked in and I said, look at all these white people. I bet they think I'm black. I'm from Oakland. They're going to think I'm peddling drugs. You know, that was the voices in my head, right? The stigma, you know, they're going to think I'm a drug addict. And I should pack up my bags and go home. I don't know why I let these kids get me into this. Talk about my son and my daughter-in-law. I let these kids get me in all kind of shit, you know, all this stuff. But I sat down, and this is what happened in my head. It said, that inner voice said, Sue, you said you're going to make this world a better place because you lived. You weren't just going to exist. And this is a way. You know, cannabis heals. So when it came, it was about my turn to stand up and say who I was, to introduce myself. I stood up and said, hello, my name is Sue Taylor. I'm a commissioner on aging, and I deal with seniors in medical cannabis. But it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy being judged. And I remember I was at a city council meeting in Berkeley. And after the city council meeting, a black guy with dreads came up to me. Said, oh, you're the weed lady. I said, no, I'm not the weed lady. I'm not the weed lady. My son came up to me, Mom, you're the weed lady, Mom. You are. You're the weed lady. I said, oh, yeah, okay, I'm the weed lady. It took so long for me to accept that stigma. I was a Catholic school principal, for Christ's sake, a pillar in the community, you know, a lovely family living in the affluent hills of Oakland, you know. People respected us, you know, and I had to deal with that because it was a bigger picture. And that's what Chris captured in this film. And that's what Chia and all the other women in this film represent. We're changing that because it's about healing the world, about healing communities, about healing families, because the pharmaceutical approach to managing symptoms is not working for any of us. And if anybody's going to change it, it's going to be the energy of the young people and the wisdom and knowledge of elders such as myself, working together to build better families, better communities, better governments, resulting in a better world. But we need the cannabis as a viable medicine to help, to bring clarity back to the mind so they can physically move the other. Now, pharmaceuticals have its place, trust me, for those who need it, but they were made for temporary use. Not for you to be on them 10 years later, because it causes a fog. And that's what's happening to people of my age group. That's why it's so important. Like Chia, she's young, she's vibrant, she's in there. Us working together, you know, and Chris, working with younger people, with elders like myself. Because you know why? Because we can teach y'all a few things. And you know what else? You guys teach us a tremendous amount. Mm. We need y'all. The elders need you guys. And Chris has done an awesome job with capturing all of that good stuff on camera.
Yeah.
So it's okay to voice it to the world. I admire Chris because, you know, she's from the corporate world. She used to have a big high paying job, and she followed her passion doing this. And I kept telling her when things would get hard, and it got hard for her sometimes, you know, I said, no, this is what you came here to do. I said, this is what I came here to do with this cannabis stuff. I said, we can't quit. Things will be hard, but that's how we learn. You grow from those challenges. You don't veer away from them. Say, thank you. Thank you, God, for these challenges. You look for the gift in those challenges and you move forward. Hmm. And that's what she did in that film. It was hard for her, but she got it done and did it well.
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Chris, I mean, back to you. I mean, what did you take away from this? What struck you the most about these small farms, these small farmers, and just the experience of making the film?
Well, I was so grateful to be invited into this community. You know, I had to really gain the trust of the people up north. And, you know, they hadn't really talked to the press or a documentarian or had their photos taken or any of that. So what I was really moved by was the heart and soul of the community. I mean, these are people that care for the land. They're stewards of the land. They're people that, you know, moved off the grid, going back to the lander movement in the late 70s. They put, you know, back into their community from selling cannabis just as a means to pay for their lifestyle. And all the money continued to be put back into the community. You know, when the regulations were being rolled out, it became obvious that they weren't thinking about the operators that had been in the space for decades, and they were slanted towards you know, big business. So, you know, and that became very evident when the 1 acre cap was overturned in the regulations. And so for me, it was a wake-up call for, like, you know, unbridled capitalism coming into you know, a market, a culture that had been doing this for decades and supplying their local economies. So it became a big business against small business kind of story pretty quickly. And, you know, that's always hard to see. It's happened with the dairy industry. It's happened with the beef industry. It's happened across the country. So to see the fact that, you know, cannabis is most likely the most heaviest regulated crop of we've ever had in human history. So, you know, it went from it being this counterculture movement of hippies and, you know, using cannabis as medicine to this commodity. And that was a little hard to take, you know, because, you know, it's just a plant. It's just a plant.
Yeah. Joss, I need a few more minutes. I have...
It's okay. We're used to it.
Come up. We'll come back in a minute. Okay. Give me another 5 minutes. Thank you.
Everybody's doing that.
Yeah. Thank you. to Chia and Sue, one of the things too, as we, you know, start to wrap up our time, as my 6-year-old has demanded that we do. I mean, here you've both seemed to may have had different experiences with this business model. As we talk about this 1 acre thing being overturned, the regulation being overturned. And I was wondering what challenges for you both have been the most difficult, and what do you still think needs to take place?
Well, personally, I think the biggest challenges have been the overregulation that, you know, Chris was talking to. going from totally unregulated and into this space has been a real challenge in terms of trying to bring forth capital. And, you know, we've been working on a shoestring budget, really. You know, prices of cannabis in California haven't been the best for quite a while. And so it's been really challenging to just kind of jump in and all these very large expenses from handfuls of agencies that want a little piece of the pie has been really hard for us. And on top of that, you know, the local jurisdiction, the county where I live in has sort of flip-flop back and forth between creating an ordinance that we're supposed to follow and moving down this road. And then all of a sudden it's like they put a stop to it, or they, oh, now you got to go this way. And we just kind of try to ride the waves as they come at us. And that's sort of been the theme of, you know, the last pretty much the whole life of being in cannabis. But, you know, the last 5 years or so has really just been riding the waves and trying not to get overwhelmed and feel like, you know, we have a mission here, like Sue spoke to so passionately, that we're really here to change the world. And I have to remind myself of that a lot. And, you know, that it has to really come from the heart. And when you start freaking out and overwhelmed with all the, you know, the chaos of the industry, that you just remind yourself and constantly try to stay on your path. So for us, you know, it's really just been trying to ride the waves of regulation and stay with it, because we know we do good work and we have a great brand and a beautiful farm. So.
Excellent. Thank you. Sue, what about you?
Like Tia said, a lot of the challenges is really how to keep the plant pure and whole. Say, like Tia's farm, you know, if you're getting medicine from her, you know, it's quality medicine without pesticides, and it's all good nutrients. You're getting some quality medicine. And as the industry grows with regulations and all of that, it kind of weans out those people who care about the plant, those smaller farms who've nurtured that plant for so long and have kept everything growing. Things are so expensive with all the things that you have to put in place since legalization, and the small farmers can't compete with that. So the quality medicine, you have to make sure you're still getting it. And another challenge that we had, Tia said it as well, it was the funding. We had two partners, and we had to go through one with the funding, had challenges with that, go through the second one, had many challenges with that, because we just didn't know. We didn't know what we didn't know, right? We didn't know how to vet out people. And but the good news is that we did finally partner up with the Glasshouse Group, and they had the money, but more importantly, they had the vision that we had about cannabis. They had the heart, and they wanted me because the senior component was dear to their heart. You see? So you find somebody who's aligned with your vision that'll keep that plant whole, that'll keep your vision up. So that was the light at the end of the tunnel with all those challenges. But it's kind of like Chia said. Like somebody asked me, they said, damn, 12 years, what made you stay in it so long? And I'm being mindful that it was 6-year-old, because, you know, they're the ones that run the house. So look, you know, said, why didn't you quit? After 12 years, what kept you going? Mm. I said, never dawned on me to quit. You know why, Steve? It was in here. Mm. Like Chia, it was in here. Like Karen and all those other women, it's in here. When your mission is strong, you don't quit, because it's driven from inside. And everybody should find out why they came onto this earth, because it lies within. I didn't choose this industry. It chose me. And Chris got it on camera.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I appreciate about this film, there's a lot of love in this film.
Yes.
In a number of levels, from love towards, like, from the film towards you all. And what it really shows is the love that you all have for the people that you're serving. So I really appreciated that.
No pun intended. That's a high compliment. That's lovely. Thank you.
Well, I thank you for chatting with me. Honestly, I really appreciate it. It's a wonderful film, and I wish you all the best. So thank you all so much.
Thank you.